10:38, and this is the Steakhouse on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. What a fabulous time it's been being out here over the last week. And what a way to start our show, and that we get four straight days at Flowery Branch with the Falcons in these plush studios. And I know it sounds cliched, but you know, I get a little, I'm an old-time radio guy.
Yeah.
When I was 7 years old, you know, when I heard people talking sports on the radio, and I was like, hold on a second. People get paid to do that?
Right.
That's what I need to do. And never being on a station like this, we're driving up here, and this 100,000-watt monster signal, and I talk about driving, whether you're going north or you're going to the lake or wherever, to hear such a, you know, signal, which is why the Falcons love being on 92.9, because you're on, like, the biggest signal in the market. For us to be here in this these amazing surroundings, and just all week long, I mean, you know, Andy and Randy get the players right when they get off the field. You heard Kyle Pitts. You heard Marcus Mariota. Then Mike and Carl do a great job grabbing these guys as they're coming off.
Yep.
So that if you listen in the afternoon, you're getting more interviews. And then we're getting lucky enough to get Mike Vick coming up in about 3-4 minutes, who's just finishing up a TV interview and is going to be over here. But it's a great setup, and it's great to be attached to the National Football League. Haven't done that for years and been lucky enough to be at a station where we were the flagship for years. We were there together.
Mm-hmm.
And then NBA coming up and Atlanta United. You notice Mike Conti, who is does a great job programming this station, but he's walking a little more upright this week after that call he had on Saturday.
Can you just go national?
I think it's not confirmed, but if you call Mike Conti now, I think his call is his ring.
That would be a good idea. We should all make it our ring.
If you call, you can't confirm or deny it. I think it's deny. You think
that
deny.
Is great.
He's very humble.
Yes.
I was like, bro, that's a signature call.
That was
a signature call.
The money.
So if you know me, I'm kind of modest. You know,
that's you. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What is that? How people describe me? Understated, modest.
I've heard other adjectives. weren't two of them, but I'm sure.
I would have had that thing. I would have just been handing out like little mini discs. They still do that. Hey, nice to meet you, Steak Shapiro. Listen to this call.
Listen to me.
Listen to my call.
That's phenomenal. Hilarious.
It's like Mike Bell taught me. More of me.
More of me.
More of me.
But speaking of, the energy out here today is pretty cool. And NFL Network. They were here about 6 a.m. setting up, so they're doing practice. They're doing live hits. So
Listen, I remember when we were the epicenter of the National Football League, mm-hmm. right? Because you had Matt Ryan and Julio Jones and Roddy White and an NFC Championship team or a team that, you know, listen, covering the Falcons, you know, we should have gone to the Super Bowl in that 49er game. We blow the lead and we can't stop their tight end in the second. We can't stop the running game in the second half. Then we do go to the Super Bowl a few years later. But when you talk about, like, the epicenter of the NFL Network was always rolling through Atlanta.
Yeah.
High-profile franchise with all those guys on offense and recognizable coaches and Mike Smith and Dan Quinn and listen, we're not exactly in that same category anymore, right? So to say the least. Yeah, to see NFL Network set up here reminds us that every game, every team matters in the National Football League.
Exactly, right.
So really cool to be out here. Mike Vick walking up, getting ready to chat with him, a guy that both of us got to cover virtually his entire career. So we'll spend some time there and then wrap things up and wait for Andy and Randy to put the midday show up, and I'm sure they'll have another Falcon coming up as well. So,
and I told you this a long time, way before Michael Vick's about to sit down and talk to us. Hey, Michael, of how good Michael Vick is on TV. And when we were covering, and Michael didn't, I don't think he loved the media. I'm going to ask him because you were so good on this new show, the NFL Kickoff, Mike.
Thank you so much.
You're really the craft.
We covered your very first interview ever in Atlanta.
Yeah, that's right.
Your very first press conference.
I did not like doing interviews.
No. But I would say it's amazing to think that years later you would be a TV personality or whatever you want to call you, journalist.
Journalist.
That's what I tell my wife, and she's like, you ain't no journalist.
Journalist.
Said, you're an analyst. So I'm like,
analyst,
baby,
okay.
This is hard work. And it's, what
do you attribute for a lot of folks? And I've watched guys that commit to it and just say, I'm going to get good at this. How did you do that? What was the focus?
Well, I think it was the people that I work with for sure. You know, Carissa, she, especially in the beginning, she always used to, you know, help me out in certain ways. And Tony used to come to me and to give me little tips.
Pointer, sure.
You know, and I seen them always taking notes and always working on their craft. And then what really did it for me was you know, Michael Irvin. I seen him in the hotel one day, and he was working with NFL Network, and he was walking down the hallway, and he was reciting, he was talking to himself, and I'm like, what is he talking about? Like, what's wrong with Mike?
Yeah, he's acting weird.
But he was reciting his lines.
Yeah.
Or not reciting, but how he wanted to say.
Kind of rehearsing.
Yeah, rehearsing. And
thinking about what I want to go with.
Yeah,
what I want to go with.
Thinking about what he wanted to go with, what sounds best. And, you know, I took a lot away from it. I heard Colin Cowherd on one of his shows. Colin, the guy who I love dearly. I heard him say on one of his shows that, you know, we don't just wing it. I don't get on the show, and I think Colin is amazing.
Yeah,
right.
Even
preparing.
Colin is preparing and putting in the time and effort to make sure his show flows fluently. And now, I said to myself, I got to do the same thing.
That's crazy.
The minute I changed the mindset and stopped looking at it like work and start having fun and enjoying Sundays,
being entertaining,
and being with the guys, it was like this is something that I really like doing. And you know, it grew on me over the years. And at first, I was used to, you know, I was always used to having a microphone in my face, and being asked questions by the media. Now it is reversing. I'm entertaining the audience.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
full circle.
It was a difference.
Mike Vick is with us live here at training camp in Flowery Branch. So I am going to look back at the career a little bit in Atlanta and before that, because I've been on the radio from the day that we heard. I was on the air. I tell the story all the time. Our update guy busts in the room and says, bro, we just traded for the number one pick. Dan Reeves just got the number one pick. We're going to get Michael Vick. Because you, a lot like Zion Williamson and LeBron and other guys, there was no debate. Mike Vick is the number one pick. So it was only about who gets number one gets Mike Vick.
Right.
It all starts really that freshman season at Virginia Tech. And I'm curious, how much hype? There was a lot of hype as a recruit. But once you play in that Sugar Bowl against Florida State and have that freshman year that you had, did your life in terms of fame completely change from that moment? Or were you,
Yes. And leading up to that, prior to it, it was starting to change drastically, and more people asking for my autograph. I didn't even know how to do an autograph. I was just scribbling things on paper, and they wanted to, you know, take pictures
did you used to
with
give
Polaroids. And
did you give autographs in high school in Newport News?
No.
I
was not the guy in high school.
Okay. So then you get
to
Blacksburg. You're a redshirt freshman. Are you a big deal then?
I'm not a big deal then. I was very humble when I got to college and seeing how sophisticated and complex the offense was. And my high school career, I didn't learn a lot of football, so it was imperative that I set my first year because I wasn't ready to play. If they would have put me out there, it would have been a disaster. I think my first 3 weeks of practice, I probably had maybe 30 interceptions. Because I was just dropping back and not even – I wasn't reading defenses.
Right.
I wasn't playing with an understanding.
But they always knew you were going to redshirt.
They always knew.
Okay.
And my high school coach, he mandated that, that I redshirt.
First year don't play.
Because he knew I needed to be strengthened as a – not only as a, you know, a college student, but as a college football player, which entailed a lot.
So then take us through when which game freshman year really starts to get it going. And then, obviously, I want to know from a fame perspective, which you've basically had your entire life since then, is it right after the Sugar Bowl performance? So take us through a little bit how your life changed that year.
Yeah, well, after the Sugar Bowl, it was, you know, everything started to happen really, really fast. And I had a friend who was playing for the Baltimore Ravens, Cornell Brown, who came to me and told me that the Baltimore Ravens said they would take me in the top five in that the next year's draft, and I still had another college season to go, but it was so motivating because, you know, I watched the NFL and it was a dream of mine to play in the NFL since I was a six-year-old kid, and it was right there in front of me, but I still knew I had work to do,
right.
And I just started to grasp our offense. You know, I led the nation in passing efficiency. I wanted to build on that. I wanted to become a better pass. I knew I needed to have better fundamentals, and you know, I was a Heisman Trophy candidate, which added pressure to the season unnecessarily.
Yeah. So, is life totally different then on campus?
Life on campus is different. I'm eating free everywhere. They taking good care of me. Not, you know, from a financial standpoint, but you know,
whatever you needed,
for the
they made
hard
sure.
work I put in.
Yeah.
You know, I'm really like seeing the benefits. I went to Syracuse and seen when I was hosted by Donovan McNabb at Syracuse, I just seen how the fans just really appreciated Donovan. Yep. And we went to a basketball game. We signed autographs. And I wanted to be that guy. And then all of a sudden, I was that guy where I was.
It all kind of changed.
The notoriety on campus was amazing.
All right, we only got a few minutes, so I want to fire a lot of things at you. By the way, you're down 28-7 in that game against Florida State. Chris Wanky, Peter Wark. Because you guys come back and take the lead in that game, right?
Came back and took the lead 29-28.
Yeah.
Yeah, but lost it.
But that was a hell of a run, huh?
That was a hell of a run.
All right, so, and you do mention recently that you would have stayed at Virginia Tech with the current NIL rules. That would have been a great situation.
I wanted to stay. I did not want to go to the NFL. I did not want to enter the draft. I felt like I needed one more season under my belt. I just got acclimated. I had a ton of teammates that I cared about dearly. I really appreciated Coach Beamer and my coaches, and I wanted to graduate.
And you like being on campus. And I wanted to graduate.
I like being on campus, yeah. And things were starting to fall in place.
And you would have been a million-dollar guy probably in NIL, right?
Yeah, and you know, definitely. That might have been a detriment.
Yeah, we'll take.
Definitely.
That might have been a detriment.
Right.
I mean,
it's hard to – that's weird. Now you had nothing. You know, now you got $1 million. You're living in Blacksburg, right?
I mean, I think I needed to stay motivated. I needed to stay hungry at night. I needed to continue to dream. Like,
right.
All the while I'm playing college football, I'm still dreaming. I had no money, and I was so appreciative of the little things I had at the time. But I also knew that it was a different life ahead of me if I stayed focused and stayed in the moment and didn't get too far ahead of myself. If I could just, you know, not get complacent, continue to compartmentalize everything, and have an amazing 2000 season, then everything would
fall
come
into
full
place.
Surface. And then I spoke to a general manager who said, if you wait until your junior year, you'll be the first pick of the Houston Texans. And so it was all these things coming at me. And then I you know, it was time to enter the draft, whether I was going to go or not. And then I went back home to Virginia, and I went back in my mom's house, and you know, it was still the same thing. It was still, you know, we were still in poverty, and it was like, you got
to
change.
You had to do it.
And it was like, this is it. I got to go.
Yeah.
Right.
And I felt like I was forced to do it, but thank God I did. I ended up in Atlanta.
Mike Vick is with us live here on the Steakhouse. I want to go through, having covered your entire career, a couple of Atlanta moments. Just rapid fire, stream of consciousness. The Steeler game ends in a tie. Kind of your come out game in a lot of ways. What do you remember about that night?
It was a tough day. I remember they had
their beast.
They had a guy named, what was it, Kendrick Bell? What was this, the defensive end for the Pittsburgh Steelers? Bell?
Kendrell Bell.
They had Kendrell Bell, Joy Porter. It was just a bunch of all-stars. And, you know, we started the game, and they was hitting me, and I was, you know, I felt like I was having a lot of success up into that game. And in the fourth quarter, I just snapped out of it, and you know, I seen
incredible
we was
run.
Down, and we just started doing all the right things, and we got focused. That was the cool part about that team, is that we was able to focus when our backs was against the wall, and that's what I took away from that season. So that game right there, I grew up a lot, and ended in a tie. It felt like a win.
I thought it was a seminal game for you in that season. Obviously, winning in Green Bay. Do you remember much about the Brett Favre, Michael Vick hype going into that game, and they'd never lost a playoff game?
Yeah, I just remember they was talking about it was going to be super cold and unbearable temperatures, and we get out there, and it was like 24 degrees. And I'm like, this ain't too bad.
That's mild, right?
You know, this is good playing weather. And so from there, I felt we had the confidence, you know.
And you get the special teams touchdown.
Yeah, and then we got the elements. We got a special teams touchdown. We beat them 27-7. It was a smooth. We came out and scored on the first possession, and that set the tone.
Sean Jefferson
hit him right in the mouth.
Yep.
Hit him right in the mouth.
Great throw. Down the sideline, right?
The slant. Yep. Down the sideline.
He's a veteran to have. Great veteran to have, right?
Oh man, Sean was amazing. To have Sean and Wark in the same locker room, it was like, you know, having a dad and an uncle.
Yeah.
You know, in the locker room.
Mike Vick is with us on the Steakhouse. The most famous play of your career, probably the Vikings overtime touchdown. Do you remember just back in the day, if you saw a seam, you were going to take it? Or what do you remember about that Minnesota play?
Yeah, it was more about a pregame read. It was, you know, Coach Reeves always told me, you know, when they play man-to-man coverage, if they're not spying, then it's nobody on you. And if they have good coverage, then why not take off and run if their backs are to you?
Yeah.
And it wasn't about just taking off running. It was just great coaching.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't drop back, look down the field, and take off and run. It was – they playing you in man-to-man coverage with no spy. If they do that continuously, while everybody's running down the field, he's like, I'm gonna send everybody on goals, and if nobody guards you,
they told you that
run behind them.
So you
it was coaching.
You were not
instruction.
Wow, that's big. Props.
I was not supposed to run. I write some 585. We had comebacks, you know, at protection, and this is a good interview. Don't cut us off. Baby.
Okay, we gotta keep going. That's his call.
No, I'm just playing.
Thanks, Mike.
And then we got 545 or something like that. And I come off the coverage and they playing man. I come off the play fake and the coverage is man. I pre-snap the coverage and I'm like, you know what? It's overtime and I'm super tired of playing against this team. I'm tired of seeing purple for the day. And
best feeling in the world?
They turn their backs, I'm running. Yeah. I'm booking. And came off the fake. And
you know they hit each other, too.
And you know Sean and Brian Finner, and wasn't the fastest guy. So when I come out there, my fake – come out of the fake, they still like 10 yards into their route. They got another 9 yards to go. I'm like, you know what? Keep running. And I ran behind them, and it worked out. So sometimes speed kills, but sometimes it works out for the best.
Mike Vick with us live here on the Steakhouse. What about when you come back, the Carolina Panther play in the Dome Saturday night? You do the Superman dive. Take us through. Is that another one of those signature moments?
Yeah, I sacrificed on that play, and I got awarded a contract the very next day.
Tell us about that.
It was just one of those nights and a game that we needed to win, and everybody needed to be hyper-focused.
You had been out for a bunch of games?
I've been out for – oh, you know what? That was the year prior, okay? So, yeah, I was coming off an injury.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the whole dome was packed.
And they did
Mike Vick's return, right?
Return and ceremony before the game, and that was amazing. That was my connection to the fans. That day was the day that I connected with the Atlanta Falcons fans because, you know, my – welcome back reception was almost bigger than the game, and I've been out for we beat Carolina that
day. You went airborne from like
the end zone, and Coach Reeves once again stepped in, and Coach Reeves called some amazing plays that day, and we picked up where we left off from the beginning of the season and the season prior.
Is there one Falcon play in your career that you remember more than any other? One moment?
It's probably
a lot of them.
It's probably the game against Green Bay.
The throw to Sean?
No, when I stiff-armed Baji, beat him immediately. I can't even say his name, but he had me on the sideline, and I
threw
him into the and he was like the most fierce defensive end in the league, and I kind of like sunned him and took off, and then I broke up the middle, and I had one guy to beat, and I gave him a move, and I beat him, and he hit my leg, and they got me on it. But that would have been like my most amazing highlight of my life if I would have broke that tackle.
That's awesome. Hey, I know the Falcon fans mean a lot to you, right?
Absolutely. I mean, that's why I'm here.
Yeah.
You know, they call me. You know, when they call me, I come. When they call me, I come. In every circumstance, and definitely want to get back to a game or two during the season, and can't wait to watch Marcus. Take the team, you know, by the reins and do everything that's needed, you know, for this team to be successful. So it's exciting, you know, it's exciting to see, you know, where this team stands and how they hold up in the NFC South.
Well, thanks for reminiscing. It's great to see you again.
Thank you.
It's great to watch your career as well. Michael Vick here live. And we're done for the day on the Steakhouse. Thanks to the Falcons. Thanks everybody here, Eric and Oren. And coming up, it's Andy and Randy on Sports Radio 99 The Game.